It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 129 of Sports Day Plus. At 6:45, where are we at in society? An 81-year-old serial slingshot shooter is finally caught and subsequently dies. At 6:30, it's a look around the football world, and that includes the surprising death of a Dallas Cowboys legend and Justin Jefferson receiving a huge pay raise. At 6:15, a recap of my Chicago vacation from last week includes a reminder about elevator etiquette, and I'm looking at you, parents with strollers. And a mere seconds, a look back on the sports weekend includes the WNBA going very NBA, and not in a good way, and Longhorn baseball gets eliminated in College Station, leaving CDC with a decision regarding the future of David Pierce. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave, and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. Hope you've had a good Monday. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will get to today's sports news here in a little bit, but I did want to spend segment one talking a little bit about what happened over the weekend. The biggest news for local folks, and I understand many of you do not care that much about Longhorn baseball, but for those of you that do, because we are still in Austin, Texas, after all, the Longhorn baseball team, which maybe next to swimming and diving, is the most important program in terms of past success at the university. Therefore, you know there is a high standard each and every year with this program, and unfortunately, this season ends in disappointment. A regional that was hosted by Texas A&M in College Station, where you as a Longhorn fan are hoping, hey, maybe we can knock the number three Aggies off, moving on to another super regional. David Pierce, after all, is one of those guys that when people count him out, that's when he seems to do his best coaching and his teams play their best baseball. But it was not meant to be this year. A hard-fought extra innings game in College Station on Saturday that ends in 11 and unfortunately gets to extras as a result of some poor defense by the Longhorn shortstop that allowed A&M to ultimately tie the game to force extra innings, led to the Longhorns playing an elimination game versus Louisiana yesterday. And in the latter innings, that game, which was a close one, all of a sudden ends up ugly and results in Texas season coming to an end. 1-2 in the regional after suffering that 10-2 loss to the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. Louisiana would also bow out later in the day, allowing A&M to move on with a 9-4 victory over those Cajuns. And A&M will be hosting a super regional coming up next weekend. Their opponent is still TBD, I believe. But despite the fact that David Pierce has made it to the postseason with the Longhorns far more often than not in his time here at the University of Texas, there are some important questions being asked right now about whether David Pierce is the guy for this Texas Longhorn baseball team. Now, he just finished his seventh season in Austin. I say his seventh season. Technically, it is his sixth because that 2020 season was canceled by COVID. And other than 2019, which was an ugly year for Longhorn baseball, 500 record on the season, 27-27, 7-16 in conference play. I don't even think they qualified for the conference tournament that year. They have made the postseason every year. That included three College World Series appearances, one super regional, or one additional super regional, I should say, last year, and two regional appearances, his first year at Texas in 2017 and this year. But there are a lot of smart Texas baseball people who don't feel like David Pierce is a good fit for this program long term. So Chris Del Conte has a decision on his hands now. Stick with a guy that has made it to Omaha three times in his 7 years. That includes a best finish of making it all the way to the semifinal back in 2021 before being knocked out by Mississippi State, who ultimately did win the whole thing. So you lost to the eventual champion. But it feels like Texas has done less with more during David Pierce's time here. Now, this season, it did feel like early on that things were going to come completely apart. And despite the fact that Texas, for a good portion of conference play, kept losing that Friday night game, they kept scratching and clawing their way back and winning those weekend series in their final season in the Big 12. But there were still major issues with pitching that unfortunately did surface against Louisiana yesterday, and an exciting offense that also sputtered over the last couple of games in the season. That loss to A&M and then the loss to Louisiana yesterday. So I think if Texas was remaining in the Big 12 next year, Pierce would probably get one more season, but there is a level of seriousness and the need to make a change now if you're going to make that change or if you feel like that change is going to need to be made in the next year or two. And that is Texas moving into the SEC. The SEC is the best baseball conference in the country, as evidenced by the fact that all the recent national champs come from the SEC. Now, some of those teams have had pretty precipitous drop-offs the following year, but that's where your national championships are coming from in college baseball. Texas baseball is known for national championships and competing for national championships. And for my money, there's too many people that know this program inside and out, not only have a good intuitive, but also a logical feel for Texas baseball, who do believe that a change is necessary. And that doesn't speak to anything about David Pierce as a person. By all accounts, Pierce is a pretty decent dude. But if he doesn't seem like the right guy for a baseball program with the prestige of the Longhorns, you got to make that change and you got to do it now. So we will probably find something out over the next couple of days. And of course, if and when that happens, we will let you know. And stay tuned because my guy Kevin Dunn joins me every Tuesday for the full hour. And so you know we will get into this at least a little bit during tomorrow's show. So stay tuned for that. Real quick before the commercial break, did also want to make mention, I guess congrats are in order to the Edmonton Oilers. The Florida Panthers are going to be playing for a Stanley Cup starting in a couple of days. Very few people in these parts will care. Disappointing end of the Dallas Stars season. They outplayed Edmonton yesterday. I actually watched a decent chunk of that game. The shot differential was bananas. The Stars were in the 30s, and Edmonton had to scratch and claw just to get above 10 shots on goal for the entire game. And their season comes to an end despite being that one seed. But I did want to talk about this real quick before the commercial break. Because the WNBA, I think, is starting to make a mistake in an effort to draw more eyeballs to its league. And that's trying to look a little bit too much like the NBA. I realize that the WNBA didn't tell whatever the Chicago Sky player's name was to go shove Caitlin Clark to the ground. Like a little bit of a flop, if I'm being completely honest. But to take a slight cheap shot and the amount that people are talking about that league just now and the idea that any pub is good pub, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that these sort of tricks and tactics that the NBA has deployed over the years, that the NBA pushes to promote its product, are actually bad for people caring about the product itself. Yeah, sure, maybe people are going to tune in to Caitlin Clark's team, Indiana Fever, I think, Indianapolis Fever, I'm not totally sure, against the Chicago Sky the next time those two teams play. I don't know how much more likely people are going to be to tune into regular WNBA games. See, if the product is worth it, you're going to be promoting the product that much more and not have to worry about these theatrics that we're all caught up talking about over the last couple of days now, sadly, myself included. All right, coming up, going to recap a little bit of my Chicago vacation from last week, some observations, and some random thoughts rattling through my head in the Windy City right here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
It's great to be back in Austin after spending a little bit more than a week in Chicago. Yes, if you've heard me on these airwaves before, you know you have to drink up anytime I mention to Chicago. So this is going to be a drink-heavy segment because my family did visit my wife's extended family and the city that we are so fond of with our kids all last week. You heard the show last week. I was broadcasting from Chicago. I mentioned it a couple of times, but I wanted to save most of the details for this week, and certainly going to get into it a little bit more with Kevin Dunn on tomorrow's show. He joins me every Tuesday for the full hour, but I did want to give you at least a little bit of a recap of our travels during this segment. Before we get back to the sports talk next segment, it's going to be a look around the football world, talking about Larry Allen's unfortunate passing, the Cowboys may be doing at slot wide receiver, it's a bit of a head scratcher, and more. But did want to fill you in on the highlights and even a low light or two from this past week, starting with the disaster that is Austin Bergstrom Airport. I realize that Bergstrom in some ways is trying hard to renovate, to get with the times, but oh my goodness, that place makes things more difficult than it needs to be. There was a mild crowd when we were leaving Austin for Chicago a couple of Saturdays ago, but because of how the airport had things organized, it felt like complete chaos. The TSA lines were not bad at all, but because of where people were bunched up or forced to stand to do very basic things to get through the airport, to their gate, and eventually onto their flight. I just don't understand why Bergstrom has to make things even more difficult for themselves. And don't get me started on the Uber situation there either. People who want to catch an Uber at Bergstrom have to walk what feels like, I don't know, a mile and a half. And it's a bit of a maze to get there as well. And then when you get to this parking garage, there's also complete chaos there too. The drivers are confused. A lot of the people who are in from out of town are confused. And I heard a lot of people talking about that at Bergstrom. So Bergstrom, get your act together. It's pathetic. I get it. One of the security checkpoints is being renovated right now. It's down. It's a shame too, because that was the secret checkpoint for a long time. But the checkpoint wasn't the problem. We got through TSA really quickly. The problem was damn near everything else, Bergstrom. Get your act together. As far as Chicago goes, it's one of the most beautiful cities on the planet. Remains that way, even though I know many of you have heard over the last few years that it met its demise. Is Chicago perfect? Absolutely not. Avoid the winter at all costs. The roads there completely suck. But that city remains beautiful, and apparently it has gotten a handle on some of the crime downtown and around the city too, thankfully. Whenever you go to a place like Chicago, you do want to be a little bit of a tourist, especially if you are completely unfamiliar with the place. You also want to make sure that every meal counts. That is a city where you have to try hard to find bad food. And unfortunately, for my family and me, our efforts to see the city, but also eat well, well, unfortunately, that was met with a little bit of an issue. Our first full day in Chicago. See, we spent the weekends in the suburbs with my wife's family, which was a lot of fun. But when you go into Chicago proper, you know you have Beard, James Beard award-winning places, Michelin star-rated places. And so you need to make every meal count. So our first day there, met some friends who also have young kids at the Lincoln Park Zoo. It's a free zoo near downtown Chicago, just north of downtown. Pretty cool zoo, too. Wouldn't call it on par with the Fort Worth Zoo or the San Antonio Zoo or the San Diego Zoo. But again, it's a free zoo, and they have all the animals that you could want to see. Big cats, primates, giraffe, rhinoceros, kangaroos, all the animals. Well, I thought, because this isn't the biggest zoo, that us getting there mid-morning meant we would spend an hour or 2 hours at most at the Lincoln Park Zoo and then go find a good lunch somewhere. We are in Chicago, after all, and we don't want to burn a meal at the Lincoln Park Zoo food court, but that's what ends up happening. So I make the decision, rather than decide to order a gorilla burger or a giraffe pepperoni pizza or the kangaroo chicken nuggets. I know, it's contradictory. Is it kangaroo or is it chicken? Apparently they are giving every item of food a subtitle there. So it's not really gorilla burgers. It's gorilla beef burgers. They're just calling them the gorilla burgers for some strange reason. Well, I chose not to eat because we already had reservations for my favorite place to eat in Chicago that night, a place called Avec, A-V-E-C. You ever go to Chicago, go to Avec. Go to the West Loop location. That's the original, still outstanding food all these years later. Mediterranean spot. So I say, you know what? Rather than get the gorilla burger or the kangaroo chicken McNuggets or anything else on these menus, and look, I see that there's more fresh items in the refrigerator case over there, I'm just going to choose not to eat. I'm going to save my appetite for my favorite place to eat on the planet. Well, my friend, who is also fairly health conscious, wanted to make the smart decision here. He knew that getting the gorilla burger or the kangaroo nuggets or the giraffe pizza was not in his best health interest. So he goes to the refrigerated case and gets a salad with grilled chicken on top. Fast forward a few days when I see them again, he says, oh yeah, by the way, I forgot to text you this, but I was up from about 1 a.m. till 6 a.m. puking my guts out. And I said, well, did you think it was the salad with grilled chicken on top of it from the Lincoln Park Zoo food court? He said, yeah, that's exactly what it was. And I'd like to think that I said this to myself, but I'm pretty sure I said it out loud. Thank God I didn't make that decision, because that's exactly what I would have ordered too. And food poisoning sucks. You literally feel like you're dying. Now, any women listening right now say, anytime a guy gets sick, he makes it seem like he's dying, even though he's not. You're not wrong about that, but food poisoning is the worst of those feelings. So if you go to Chicago or New York or San Francisco or pick another major city, don't waste a meal. And certainly don't waste a meal at the food court at the freaking zoo. Those are the sacrifices you have to make, though, as a family guy. The kids want the giraffe pizza and the gorilla burger and the kangaroo nuggets. Sometimes you just have to say no, though, but you also need to make sure to cater to them as well. By the way, this gets me to elevator etiquette 101. And this is a situation that I found myself in a couple of different times, or a situation that I observed a couple of different times. We were at the aquarium our last day in the city on Thursday before going back out to the suburbs to my wife's family. And the aquarium, the Chicago Aquarium, the Shedd Aquarium is what it's called, is in that cluster of museums near Soldier Field. The Field Museum's over there, the Adler Planetarium, Millennium Park is over there, and the Shedd Aquarium. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. The Shedd Aquarium, it's an aquarium. It smells. It's terrible. There are some cool creatures there, but give me the area where the sea life is completely sealed off from us. In terms of whatever water they're in, we're not having to smell that water or the creatures in the water either. The dolphin show, take it or leave it. I can leave it. I don't need the dolphin show. Dolphins are criminals, and I'll get into this a little bit more tomorrow. But the Shedd Aquarium has an area where you go from one level to the other, and you don't have the option of taking stairs. You have to take the elevator. Of course, it being an aquarium during the week, there are a lot of tourists and a lot of families with young kids at the aquarium. This includes families who have kids who are still stroller age, which is fine. I get it. You want to have that stroller with you because those little 2-3-year-olds, they get tired of walking and it's really exhausting trying to carry them everywhere. So you bring the stroller with. But if you're going to bring a stroller with, You also need to be aware of how big and clunky that stroller is and make sure that you are not putting everybody else out because you decided to bring a stroller with you to an aquarium. I set all of that up for some very simple elevator etiquette. If you are in a place that has multiple elevators that are moving pretty quickly, a touristy spot like the Shedd Aquarium, and you're standing in line or you're about to get in line for the next elevator, and you see an elevator that has just been filled with people closing to go to that next level, and there's probably going to be another elevator that appears for you in the next 30 seconds, don't press the up button to get the elevator doors that are closing to open back up. And certainly, if you accidentally do that, don't step to the elevator like you expect to get on the elevator too with your kid in a stroller, which is that exactly what some jackass did, forcing everybody to go sardine mode, no pun intended, even though we're in an aquarium, to fit his kid in the stroller and him on the elevator. I looked at him. My family was with me. They always get embarrassed when I have to do this sort of thing. But I looked at him, Larry David style, and said, was this necessary? And he just looked at me like he didn't know what was happening. So I just let it go. I could have continued to pursue that. I could have chided him or embarrassed him in front of everybody. Would it have embarrassed my family? Perhaps. But it would have embarrassed him a little bit more and really called him to shame for this decision that he made, rather than waiting an extra 30 seconds to get on an elevator that wasn't going to jam everybody in there. Him and his stroller kid included, by the way. All right, that is it for this edition of the Chicago Recap. Stay tuned because there will be more coming up tomorrow. I assure you, you do want to tune in for that. Coming up next, though, we get back into sports. That includes a look around football, some Dallas Cowboys news, and more here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Taking a look around the football world this segment here on Sports Day Plus, and unfortunately, I have to start with some sad news that was reported a little bit earlier today, and that would be Hall of Fame offensive lineman Larry Allen, who played his entire career with the Dallas Cowboys, died suddenly while on vacation with his family in Mexico. Died at 52 years old. The team made the announcement earlier today. From the Cowboys statement, Larry, known for his great athleticism and incredible strength, was one of the most respected, accomplished offensive linemen to ever play in the NFL. His versatility and dependability were also signature parts of his career. Through that, he continued to serve as an inspiration for many other players, defining what it meant to be a great teammate, competitor, and winner. He was deeply loved and cared for by his wife, Janelle, whom he referred to as his heart and soul, his daughters, Jayla and Loriana, and his son, Larry III. The Jones family and the Cowboys extend their deepest condolences, thoughts, and prayers to the Allen family, and grieve along with the many other friends and Cowboys teammates that also loved Larry. Now, Larry Allen was a second-round pick from Sonoma State back in 1994 and very quickly asserted his dominance as an offensive lineman in the NFL. He was named a Pro Bowler 11 different times, played for the Cowboys from 94 through 2005, won that Super Bowl in 1995, and I'd forgotten this before looking at this story right now. He actually spent his last 2 years with the San Francisco 49ers. He's also a first-team All-Pro 6 times, playing right tackle, right guard, and left tackle, but mostly starting as a left guard in the NFL. His quarterbacks started with Troy Aikman and ended with Tony Romo. And his former Cowboys teammates are all paying tribute on social media and elsewhere, as you can imagine, today as well. So that's a sad piece of news from the world of the Dallas Cowboys. And how about this curious piece of news regarding the current team? Because as you're aware, if you have paid attention to the Cowboys this offseason, it's been a roller coaster of emotion with Jerry Jones initially saying they were going all in, then walking that back a week later, them not doing a whole lot in free agency. It's a bit of a mixed bag in terms of the draft, but there is a serious question as to what they're going to be doing at the running back position this year. Yeah, they brought Zeke Elliott back into the fold, but according to Mike McCarthy, it is going to very much be a running back by committee. You assume part of that committee would be former Kansas State running back and local product, Deuce Vaughn. But the Cowboys may have other plans for Deuce Vaughn. Vaughn told reporters, I think in the last couple of days, that he had been working out as a wide receiver during OTAs, mostly in the slot. Now, he does continue to take running back reps and reps as a backup returner, which he also did his rookie season last year. But Deuce Vaughn being looked at as a potential slot receiver for this football team. I still think you give this kid a chance as a running back, he's going to make you look like a genius in the process. Even though he's a late round pick, didn't really play last year, people have continued to doubt him going all the way back to high school, and he proves the doubters wrong. Did so in high school, did so at Kansas State, and I do think he will eventually do so at the NFL level as well. But if the Cowboys play him as a slot receiver, and look, he is a good receiver as a running back, but I don't know if that's the ideal position for the 22-year-old Austin area native. Great kid, too, by the way. Had the pleasure of speaking with him at Big 12 Media Days a few years ago, his final year at Kansas State, and was already a fan prior to that conversation and walked away from that conversation an even bigger fan of Deuce Vaughn. Outside of the state, but sticking with the NFL, the Vikings did the smart thing and made sure that their star wide receiver remains happy. Justin Jefferson has agreed to a four-year, $140 million contract extension that includes $110 million in guaranteed money. $88.7 million was due at signing, so congratulations to Justin Jefferson. You now have FU money, as the kids like to call it. Big fan of Justin Jefferson. You worry a little bit when a guy gets a huge deal like that, that the focus could slip just a little bit, but Justin Jefferson is an insane talent. That would shock me if you were to see him do something other than continue to be really good as a wide receiver. He's got a new quarterback this year, although it hasn't been announced just yet. Expect to see J.J. McCarthy as his starting quarterback. Jordan Addison, a great number two option for the Vikes. He did some nice things in his rookie year last season from USC and then previously from Pitt. And so Justin Jefferson will be a Minnesota Viking for at least the next 4 years. Switching to the college side of things now, about the Big 12 sharing a record $470 million of revenue distribution. This was announced late last week as the conference was wrapping its first spring meetings as a 14-team league and before growing by two more schools. Now, the two new schools were actually a part of the meetings. Texas and Oklahoma chose to sit this one out, although they will receive that revenue distribution. Brett Yormark, ever the salesman. Look, I'm a fan of Brett Yormark, but he is ABC, always be closing. From Yormark, we went with stability as a conference, and we felt it was investing in all the right ways and for all the right reasons. Clearly, that was the right one for this conference as we think about where we're going. Now, the newest schools last year, BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and University of Central Florida, only get partial shares of about $18 million each. That means nearly $400 million will be distributed out amongst the league's other 10 schools. So nearly $40 million per school, including Texas and Oklahoma, by the way. About $440 million was distributed last year. So the overall distribution numbers, if we're thinking about this correctly, actually went down a little bit, but the total number went up because the total number of schools went up. Big 12 grows to 16 teams this coming season with Arizona State, Arizona, Colorado, and Utah officially joining. Here in a couple of months with Texas and Oklahoma becoming official members of the Southeastern Conference. It's either June 30th or July 1st that that officially happens. Now, Yulmark did say the increases in revenue were a result of a bigger college football playoff and bowl revenues. You're welcome. Growth in ticket revenue across all conference championships and sponsorship after streamlining that to be handled directly by the conference instead of using outside parties. Though it was record revenue for the Big 12, they do still fall behind Big 10 and SEC revenue distribution, which shouldn't be surprising, but also squarely behind the ACC too. Remember, $470 million was the revenue distribution for the Big 12 for this most recent year. How about $707 for the ACC? Not quite double, but that really puts things into perspective, doesn't it? As the ACC looks like a league that is on the verge of crumbling and becoming a shell of itself before it's all said and done. I don't think we got into this last week. No, we didn't get into this last week because I only talked about Greg Sankey and his BS comments about student athletes not wanting to be taxed like employees. That means they're going to be taxed like independent contractors, which is where things can become an even bigger headache and possibly lead to more taxation. But Greg Sankey at SEC meetings last week also didn't completely shoot down the idea of adding more schools in the future. So it does feel like he may be starting to lay the groundwork for a school like a Florida State or North Carolina or a Clemson to ultimately join the SEC as well. And if and when that happens, we creep much closer to the likelihood that the SEC and Big Ten create their own super conference in football. Maybe they do this with the other sports as well, but at the very least, that would happen with football. All right, real quick before the commercial break, the latest potential electees for the College Football Hall of Fame were announced earlier today. The ballot for the Hall of Fame class that'll be announced in January was released by the National Football Foundation today. It includes 77 players and 9 coaches from the Football Bowl subdivision, as well as 101 players and 34 coaches from the divisional ranks. That includes the championship subdivision and divisions 2 and 3. Those names on the ballot for the very first time include former Pitt defensive lineman Aaron Donald, Nick Saban, and Urban Meyer. Now, there is a little bit of Texas Longhorn flair on this year's College Football Hall of Fame ballot. One of my all-time favorite players, probably my favorite defensive player of all time, Michael Huff, is up for possible induction into the College Football Hall of Fame. Well-deserving, in my opinion. And then also, Dan Neal is on that College Football Hall of Fame ballot as well. Former All-American interior offensive lineman for the Texas Longhorns in the 1990s, turned Super Bowl champ with the Denver Broncos early on in his pro football career. So best of luck to those guys and their efforts to make it to that College Football Hall of Fame. All right, coming up, it's one final segment. Today, that means where are we at in society? An 81-year-old serial slingshot shooter is finally caught, and he subsequently dies a day later.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of the show means it's time for
where are we at in society today?
That's right. It is your regular look at stories that show we as a people are headed in the wrong direction. Very occasionally, I will bring you a story that provides a sense of optimism that has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out. But sadly, today is not that day. And we start today in California, just east of Los Angeles, in the community of Azusa, California. That's how I'm pronouncing it. A-Z-U-S-A, California. Where a serial slingshot shooter was finally caught by police after a years-long investigation that resulted in nearly a decade of people having to deal with ball bearings ending up going through their windows and windshields. The guy who was finally caught and arrested on May 23rd, his name was Prince King. He was 81 years old, and most accounts from those who lived in the neighborhood that was terrorized by the slingshot, where Prince King also lived, said he was a pretty nice old guy. An old guy that they knew as Wick from one of his neighbors, Veronica Jonathan. Quote, he was always nice. Jonathan said that she works from home and that King would frequently declare break time and come over to chat. She said that he would bring treats for her dog and they never had any problems. I'm honestly surprised. I never thought he'd be terrorizing the neighborhood like that. She and her sister-in-law called King Gran Torino because, like the character played by Clint Eastwood in the 2008 movie, he had white hair, became a widower years ago, and lived alone. Wasn't that guy a colossal a-hole too? My memory serves from watching that film, and it was only once, and it was probably back around 2008. But maybe he was a bigger jerk than they realized when they gave him that nickname. Local police said that the investigation had been ongoing for many years because they just couldn't figure out who the suspect was. But a search of King's two-bedroom home led to the discovery of a slingshot and ball bearings, which resulted in his arrest. He was charged with 7 counts of vandalism, 5 of them felony vandalism, and 2 misdemeanors, according to court records. He was released from L.A. County Jail last Tuesday and given a June 17th return court date. But that court date is not going to happen because the next day, King died. Medical examiner says it was heart failure. And as you can imagine, the charges will be dropped once the death is confirmed. How about this? An old guy who walks around the neighborhood, makes it seem like he's being nice and friendly to everybody. And according to police, there wasn't really any rhyme or reason as to why he was targeting windows or windshields. But pretty much everybody in the neighborhood said, yeah, it's weird. We would hear what sounds like little pebbles or, I don't know, BBs hitting our doors and windows and cars at times, and we could never figure out who or what it was. Meanwhile, this old nice guy would occasionally have a BB gun in his lap on his front porch, which he was claiming was being used to shoot at coyotes, was probably actually using the BB gun to fire BBs at us, to go along with the slingshot too, by the way. Now, police did say that even though there wasn't necessarily a rhyme or reason, like these people didn't do anything to him necessarily, that he wasn't picking his targets at random, but they still have no idea why he targeted his own neighbors. Quote, we're not aware of any kind of motive other than just malicious mischief. So, maybe he just loved the slingshot going back to his childhood. Look, he's 80 years old, or he was 80 years old before he died. Think back 70 years to when he was 10 years old. It's maybe the height of slingshot popularity. Having a hard time doing math right now, but that would be back in the mid-1950s. Oh, yeah. Big time slingshot culture back in the mid-1950s. But I feel like it probably tapered off at the start of the Simpsons era, what, late 80s, early 90s? But 1950s, kids and slingshots, yeah. Went together like, well, they were playing a lot of Cowboys and Indians back then. I realize kids nowadays can't play Cowboys and Indians anymore. Do you call it Cowboys and Native Americans? Whatever it was, it no longer is for a variety of reasons. kids do still fight. They do still have hypothetical gunfights with one another. But it probably has more to do with, I don't know, Fortnite characters than it does the idea of cowboys and Indians, which isn't just that being 2024 necessarily. Although we do have to say cowboys and Native Americans now. Can we even say cowboys anymore? Do we need to consider changing that one too? Does that imply something too negative? But it's simply about what they're watching on television, what they're consuming, the media that they're consuming, and them imitating that media. Back in the 1950s, there were a lot of cowboy shows on. Nowadays, it's things like Fortnite. Do they do Paw Patrol battles? I don't know. Probably not. But the serial slingshot shooter has been caught and died after spending a day in jail. Moving on now to France, where a French town is reeling from a fortune teller scandal. The town of Agde, A-G-D-E, I'm guessing Agde, which is on the Mediterranean coast, is mostly known for its beautiful sandy beaches and year-round sun. But it apparently also has a reputation for wild sex parties. The town is home to Europe's biggest swinger community. Boy, that is a big community. When you're talking about Europe, a continent that maybe has more swingers per capita than any other continent in the world, for that to be the biggest swinger community in Europe says something. Tens of thousands of couples head to Agde, France, from across Europe every year to swap partners. But right now, the town is reeling from a scandal which has the rest of France shaking its collective head in bemusement and amusement at the same time. It has to do with two people, a local fortune teller, as well as the town's mayor, the latter of whom is also a former Secret Service officer and a police officer. Now, both the fortune teller and the mayor are in jail while under judicial investigation. The fortune teller, whose name is Sofia Martinez, that doesn't sound very French, faces charges of embezzlement, while the mayor, Guillez Diatore, that's my best guess, is accused of corruption for spending lavish amounts of taxpayers' money on Martinez giving him fortunes. Miss Martinez had a reputation for being able to speak with the dead. According to the mayor's lawyer, when he asked her to put him in touch with his deceased father, she succeeded. While performing seances, her voice would suddenly appear to change and take the tone of the mayor's father. Come on. Over the past 4 years, it's alleged that she manipulated the mayor in person and by phone with incredible ventriloquist skills. Boy, we think of politicians as stupid. This guy may take the cake, though. He received thousands of mysterious calls from voices of the dead, including angels, some of them urging the mayor to help the fortune teller. And that's where the corruption comes in. The mayor is alleged to have paid for lavish holidays for Miss Martinez and her family, including to Polynesia and Thailand, all using public funds. Boy, remember back when Steve Adler was the mayor of Austin, and he got caught during the COVID era telling everybody they needed to buckle down, stay at home. He gets caught taking a vacation in Mexico. He explained it away all right, but this makes that look like nothing. It's alleged that the voices that Martinez was using on the mayor persuaded him to hire several members of her family to work for the town council and also renovate her home. Local businesses with connections to the mayor did the work for free out of fear of losing future contracts with him. With all the attention, the mayor's lawyer has actually turned into a minor celebrity overnight, because of course he has. from the lawyer. It's a crazy story. It's incredible because you have a man in politics, mayor and former MP, who is very intelligent, and you discover that a man like that can be manipulated by a woman. This is a woman who came into his life and said, "I can speak to your deceased father." She found a mental weakness in him and exploited it for personal gains. It took a long time before he accepted that he had been conned. Or maybe there's some other things happening under the table or under the